David A. Price presents...
Hey, con crud carriers. Steve Raker here from the Comic Book Bunker. Welcome to episode 318 of Marvel Noise. That's right, it's the podcast sponsored by nobody. But we're happy to be on Facebook, and you can find us on Twitter, and we're part of the Deliberate Noise Network, and all that. I'm talking so fast because this is just going to be a quick little interlude of a show squeezed in between my vacations out of state. But I had to tell you guys and my guest here that's sitting in the hot seat waiting for me to introduce him about my trip to the Boston Comic Con last weekend, which was August 10th to 12th, 2018. I guess they call it Fan Expo Boston now. But with me here is Jerry McDade.
Ha! You guys thought you were rid of me, but you was wrong. Yep. I'm back.
You thought you'd have to wait all the way till Halloween for the next batch of Tomb of Dracula books, but I pulled him out of his routine. I upset his apple cart.
And, no way. I'm excited.
Well, but I got to tell you, because the guest... Well, you'll see in a minute why I got to tell you, Jerry. But 3 days at the con, this is the show that I do with my family, because we lived in Boston for about 10 years before I had kids. So my wife doesn't mind doing Boston, at, you know, with the kids while I'm at the show some of the time solo, you know, running my scavenger hunt missions for original art and the like. But they have the type of show now. That's the one good thing about this Fan Expo takeover is, as you would think, with the more corporate, there's more celebrities, there's more photo ops and all that sort of stuff and sort of less comics than there used to be. But there's also a lot of family-oriented, like, photo opportunity, and I don't mean, like, paid, you know, Stand with William Shatner kind of a thing for $100. I mean, you know, prop set up, the 501st Legion with a bunch of Star Wars things out. There's spectacly kinds of things for the kids to enjoy if you were just walking around, you know, with dad or older brother who was there for a reason. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
And Boston's Boston, right? I mean, there's lots of stuff for people to do, which is cool. And what's nice that the con does, Jerry, is as someone with kids yourself, you'll appreciate this because how much does it now cost to, like, go to the movies or a ball game once you're a family of four instead of just you and your wife, is they let you buy add-on kid tickets that cost $10 a kid for the con and cover whatever level it like, rises to whatever level of ticket you bought.
Ah.
So if, like, you bought the premium, your kid's $10 ticket is a premium ticket for the weekend, too.
So that's sweet.
That, you know, and it's certainly, you know, it's going to make up for it because you know the kids are going to be buying stuff, right? So
how does that work if you sneak in with your buddy who's in Artist Alley?
That's
because I'm hearing you talk about buying tickets, and I'm like, buying tickets? What's that? I can't do that.
I know. This is the one con I do it for because the year or two before Fan Expo bought them, they got stingy with the press passes, especially for fan press. And it was a big stink. There's some very well-written articles online, and there was some sort of bad blood generated around that time. And it was when the ship started sinking, I would say, for the way that they had been running it.
Right.
And because I'm going with my family and stuff, and because of that aspect, I wanted the kids to be able to go. You know, if I'm going in with my press pass, how am I going to be getting them in?
Sure.
And waiting in a line or whatever. I'd rather just have the premium thing and have everybody be able to join me and go in. But yeah, I know it's weird to pay for a con. it really is. And they also do this thing now, Jerry, where it's like a creator experiences. So then you can pay additional money for, like, not private because you're doing it with hundreds of people, but, like, different signings with creators. So there was a Meet Jim Lee. There was a Meet Greg Capullo one. and there was a meet William Shatner and John Byrne one.
John Byrne at a convention?
First time, well, not that he's been basically retired from cons since about 2004 or 2005, although he made an appearance at New York Comic Con last year, apparently. And only would sign Star Trek stuff, from what I understand.
Yeah, I think I heard that rumor.
But that was kind of the deal here, was that for the premium price that you paid, you got a hardcover omnibus, oversized hardcover of all of his photo plays, Star Trek photo plays that he's done lately. And, and if you're not familiar with what his project has been like the last several years, he's doing photo play Fumetti style new Star Trek stories as if it's another season of the original Star Trek. And he's going to do exactly as many as creates a full 23 or 26 episode season, and then he's going to be done with it.
Okay.
And he's got this uncanny visual memory for scenes in these old Star Trek, so it isn't that difficult for him to think, well, I need Spock leaning over a guy on the ground for this scene. And he's putting together new stories, bringing, you know, it's like when they were butchering Kirby stories and rearranging them into new things or something. You know?
Yeah.
But so Shatner was into that. So one of the things is you could go and you could get that book signed by the both of them. Mm-hmm. And then Byrne would also sign two additional items.
Ah.
Now, I've got a Marvel Masterworks, the Dark Phoenix era one, that I had Claremont and Terry Austin. And Bob McLeod signed it also because it's got the Nightcrawler Inferno.
Nightcrawler's Inferno.
Yeah.
You discussed with us on Great Expectations podcast.
You know I love that issue.
Yeah.
So they've also, and I've often thought, you know, should I just like send this to Byrne with return postage and see if he would just sign it? I met him when I was 14 back in 1984 at a little con. He was super nice to me. He signed a couple of comic books. That's cool. Mm-hmm. But then there's this book where it's like he's the only one who is not on there, you know? And it's like, that would be cool to. So you know what? I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm with the family. I'm doing the red carpet treatment. I'm going to do the thing. It turned out he was signing at a table on and off all weekend, too, which was really generous of him. On Friday night, when I got there, it was like a 4 to 9 p.m. type of thing on Friday, almost like a preview night kind of thing, you know? But for guys like us who are trying to get art done, that's the time to get on everybody's lists, right, before the big masses come on Saturday.
Sure.
And then Byrne was signing, and I'm like, you know, my thing at cons is to not bring books anymore.
They're heavy.
And I'm not a comic signing kind of guy, although I will do, like, an issue if there's someone that I really have. Like, I brought an old Korvac saga issue when David Wenzel was going to be in Baltimore, you know, that kind of a thing.
Uh-huh.
But I'm not a comic, you know, I'm not trying to think that it's increasing my comic collection value or anything. My copies are all mostly reader copies of my comics anyway, you know?
So
what I do is I print out shipping labels with the con logo on them, and I have creators sign them to me so they know it's not some scam. And then I stick them in the hardcovers of the books on my shelf when I get home.
That's pretty cool.
And most artists and writers think this is a fantastic idea. They're like, what a great idea. And, you know, they realize that it's coming from the place of, I just want my kids to discover this on a bookshelf someday and say, hey, my old man met this guy. Not that I'm trying. Because, you know, you could say that the book isn't really even signed, right? Because it's there. It's not even them signing the book. It's the label that's like a book plate. You know, it's like an old-fashioned book plate. But that's all I'm looking for. So that's what I do. Well, I wait in the line for Byrne to sign the 10 items. He's signing 10 things. He'll just sign 10 things a day. He's got his little rules, you know, per family, 10 items per day. And there were some things, no double issues, no things along those lines. I get up to him and he says, he looks at the labels and he's like, oh, this violates my policy to not sign more than one of the same thing.
Oh, so Byrne.
Right? This is like being told to piss off by Ditko, you know? It's like, yeah. you can understand because it's like, well, that's what you're known for, being a curmudgeon, right? So it's like, yes. I understand. But it, at the same time, I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to personalize it to me, though. Could you put to Steve? And, you know, I explained, I'm just trying to stick it on a book at home, you know. That, each one's going in a different book, you know? And he's like, well, how do I know? I don't know that you're not going to sell it. And if I break this rule for you, then I have to break it for everybody. And so I was just like, you know, fair enough. I mean, how funny that he would be that threatened, right, by such a that I'm going to sell. I've got a whole bunch of Steves lined up to pay top dollar, you know.
Right.
So I was just like, fair enough. But, you know, what disappointed me, Jerry, was that the whole interaction with him was over that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I was going to tell him. I just reread that Fin Fang Foom Dragon Seed Iron Man story, and how clever of him to have combined the Mandarin's origin and Fin Fang Foom's. How easily they fit together, and I'm surprised no one did it before him, how cool that was. But I didn't get to say that. I didn't get to say thanks for all the good times. I didn't. It was more like, you know, it was picking over some nuance, you know? So I was just like,
yeah.
And it wasn't like I was fighting it. I was totally good. I was like, all right, fair enough. But it was just like, oh, that's lame, you know?
Yeah.
It's burned. I was burned.
You got burned.
I also am thinking, wow, thank God I actually brought the physical book for the things on Sunday, which was the signing with Shatner, you know? I brought that, and I brought the oversized Marvel Artist Edition, the Fantastic Four Burn Artist Edition.
Right.
So when that time comes, it's so funny. I'm second in line with this other nice guy in front of me, and Shatner comes up, and thank God we were first and second in line, because after the two of us, I don't think Shatner looked up at any of the people. He was just signing, and he's like, get the books closer to me. You know, sabotage. No. it was like, boy, if that was someone's like opportunity to like that they were hoping to actually meet Shatner, it wasn't that, it, you know, at least I got to look him in the eye and I said, hey, thanks, Bill. And then Byrne signed my Marvel Masterworks on the same page with Claremont and everything. There was nothing weird about that. And I asked him again to sign it to Steve, right?
Uh-huh.
And I said, if you would humor me too on the artist edition, sign, if you could sign it to Steve. He opens up the artist edition, Jerry, and the inside front cover is like the binding of it is a big Fantastic Four horizontal like pinup thing. And it's signed in the corner, you know, printed signature of him. And I guess he was trying to be clever visually or something, but he, instead of signing it like on the title page or something, or the big giant blank page that follows that, he signed it right next to his signature. But really messy. And he didn't put it to Steve. And it was like, he even commented that it looks like a forgery when compared to the printed signature right next to it, right? And I'm like, the only thing I thought to myself is, you got burned. And again, you know, on a comic book, do the little visual joke, no problem. But an artist edition, man, come on, son.
Yeah.
Especially if he's worried about people reselling stuff. Here I am asking him to sign it to me, which then decreases the resale value, I would think, right? I mean,
yeah.
So it's funny that he's funny, right?
Yeah.
But I got the book signed, and I got the Shatner signature, which is cool, and got to see him looking all bloated and everything.
Which one?
Shatner's body and Byrne's ego.
Yeah. How old is Shatner now? He's got to be getting up there, right?
Yeah. I won't even hazard to guess.
But ageless.
Then they had, you know, they had other spectacly things going on that were of that caliber. They had a Princess Bride reunion. They had a Back to the Future reunion.
Right.
You know, Byrne and Shatner spoke together on stage for a short time, too, amongst a big crowd. I also did the Jim Lee meet and greet thing. And that, for cheaper than the Byrne-Shatner thing, you got three signatures. And you actually did get to, like, chat with him for a minute and talk to him as if you were standing in line at his table at a con, if he was just, like, a regular kind of guest. And you got a selfie with him, which was, you know, a little more for your money. But for half of his price, Greg Capullo, you got, like, a half-hour panel of him basically doing what is equivalent to a stand-up act.
Right.
And then he does five autographs plus a panel and a print and or plus a picture and a print and a comic and that sort of a thing. So he ended up being such a value that I brought the wife and kids because we're friends with both Greg and Jamie, his wife. So it was an opportunity to be friendly with them and be supportive of them and their efforts.
Yeah, cool.
You know, I got to go to Boston to see my neighbor, which is funny. But they're, like, in Sedona now a lot of the time, so that's kind of neat, though I'll be losing a local pal.
That's right. That's right. I think every time I see him post a picture, I think of Sad Steve. My buddy! Why is he leaving me?
And so the art aspect of the con, they have good people running the comic book artist alley zone. So, you know, the amount of real estate of the con that's devoted to the artist alley might not be as much to my liking, but the folks they had there, they had good folks, both of the non-published, you know, typical artist alley type gang and of the published folks, both, you know, still working or previously working, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to get about five pieces done, as well as seven jam piece squares, Jerry.
Oh, I saw them. I was very envious.
I always like to hit up Dan Parent from Archie Comics, and he does the Die Kitty Die stuff now through Chapter House and through his Kickstarter stuff with Fernando Ruiz, who is also from Archie Comics, and that stuff is really great. Like, it's like a twist. It's like Twisted Harvey Comics, if you will. But he did a Cloak and Dagger for me, Jerry, that used Dagger as completely white negative space inside Cloak, that where, like, the line was continuous from the outside of Cloak through her whole body and hair. And, I mean, I saw him post a Cloak and Dagger, I don't know, a couple of months ago, maybe, and it was beautiful, and it was sort of a Betty-looking Dagger with the yellow hair and everything. You know, she's a blonde. Here, she's all white, but it's just such a cool composition. I mean, he really played around with it visually.
Yeah, that was a great piece.
I got a Perez-era Starfire from Buzz, who always does nice work.
Yes.
Tex, Mark Tex Zero was there as an unannounced guest at the, you know, to all the promotional material, but he was going to do participate in a Steve Ditko panel on Saturday, and he just sort of set himself up, and, you know, boy, this guy, he's a chatty Cathy.
Yeah.
And he's hard to pin down, but when you do, he's a good guy. He really is. And he drew a really nice Ghost Rider bust headshot for me right at the 11th hour of the con on Sunday, when the police were, like, trying to get us to leave because the con is closed, and I'm like, I'm waiting for this piece. But he does all the tones and everything, and he's a very talented fellow, where he even manages to use a painterly style in his pencils. He goes back in and he hits the pencils and the gray tones with an eraser at the end, and it's like going in with the lighter paint, you know, and doing the highlights. Really fun to watch work. And Declan Shalvey flew in from across the pond, and he, for an hour on Saturday, was doing head sketches kind of like While You Wait. And I got in line about 15 minutes before that hour began, and there was one fellow in front of me, and all these one fellows in front of me kind of thing. It's so nice. I met so many nice people in line, as I often do. But this guy had an Agent Venom drawn in front of me, watch him whip it out, and I did a Moon Knight classic with the cowl and everything like that. He's amazing.
Yes, he did.
But the jam pieces, I was able to finish off my Artist Alley Celestials jam with one of the Adventure Time comics artists doing a very Adventure Time-y looking take on a Kirby Celestial, which was really, really neat.
Yeah.
And fun, too, because that artist, Braden Lamb, is a Bostonite, and our pal Monsta, John Cardinal, who is a Bostonite also, started that jam piece, so I felt like the bookends were nice and local to that show, which was cool.
All right.
And another one from a guy named JPEG, who I just sort of ran across and saw. He had a Kirby, he had a demon drawing as one of his prints. And so I'm like, oh, you like Kirby, do you? You know, one of those things. And he's looking at pictures of Jemiah the Analyzer, one of the Kirbys. And we find this old headshot that Kirby did where he's got a nose. And it's like the Iron Man nose from the early 70s. It's like a big nose. And he's like, the nose, that's awesome. And I'm like, yeah, do the nose. And he did the nose. And it looks so good. Big robots. What a perfect theme for Artist Alley interpretations. And I didn't want to pay top dollar for, like, top creators to draw Kirby Celestials. I thought that, you know, these jam pieces end up being expensive scavenger hunts when all is said and done to make the piece. And for years, I thought about doing the Celestials piece, and I'm like, I don't know if I really want to, you know, prices are going up. But doing it as an Artist Alley with those guys at kind of their price tier really was a good way to do it. And now I got to think of another subject, because that was fun to just walk around and try to find someone that you'd like to maybe see do a drawing for you, you know?
Yeah.
It's like old school con walking, you know?
Well, you are the oldest of schools.
Yeah, tell me about it. The only guy older than me there, besides Byrne, was probably Neil Adams. And
oh, yeah.
I was looking into maybe seeing if he would do my Havoc to finish off that Uncanny X-Men jam that I've had sitting around for a while, because I keep being too lazy to bother John J. Muth, who I'm really hoping will draw it, and still hoping I'll draw it, because Neil's prices were just so insane, I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
Yeah, well, I sucked it up and paid the price for the very same item a few years back, and I don't regret it, Steve.
I know, yours is really cool.
Yours could be just as cool.
Let's pretend this price went up since then.
And now, you know, I'll bet it did. If it's anything like his autograph price, then I'm sure it did.
Although the rest of the world is catching up to him. He's a visionary, and he continues to be a visionary and ahead of his time.
Yeah.
Dude, everyone's charging for signatures. Again, not that I'm a signature hunter guy, but all these things that used to be just part of giving back to fans at shows and stuff. A kid wants to get his book signed, it's like $5 now. Crazy.
Yeah, I'm going to pass.
Yeah, I know it. I have a Lord of the Rings jam going that I have done in tight pencils, because the first artist did a pencil job akin to like Gene Colan work, where I can't imagine any possible way that it could be inked and not lose a big part of its quality. I mean, like it's a Nazgul riding a horse, and the horse's head, and he's like blowing steam out of its nose, and the tones in it are like, there's like no way this could be inked even by the guy who did the pencils. So I decided, you know what, I'll do the whole thing in tight pencils, and we'll see. So it's funny, because I, like you, I have done in the past, I might have a couple of jams going at the same time, and when I come across an artist, you want to find a piece that artist is going to like to draw.
Right.
You know, it makes it more fun. It's fun to talk about the character or whatever. It's fun to know that they're doing something that they're enjoying doing and not just jumping through a hoop for you, you know? Mm-hmm. So I give them the choice. You know, do you want to do, you know, one of these ones? Or I got like a Tolkien, if you like Tolkien characters. A lot of the current talent really do a hard pass on the Tolkien stuff. But the older guys who, you know, loved this stuff before the movies, they are like, yeah, what a, you know. I went to Pat Broderick, and I said, you know, would you be interested in drawing a Lord of the... Would I? He's like, if I draw one more Firestorm, I'm going to, you know... he's like, would I? I would love to draw a Tolkien thing. As a matter of fact, I will take it home to my hotel and draw it tonight to really spend my time on it. And he drew a nice tight pencil Sauron for me that's really nice looking in the armor and everything.
Yeah.
And then Dave Dorman from Star Wars comics fame mostly painted stuff, he drew a Gimli close-up of Gimli's face with a dwarf nose that's like, I mean, it looks like Ted Kennedy's nose. It's great. Really good. Then I have a DC... Oh, can I say that on Marvel Noise? I have a DC Girls color piece going, which has been slow going because it's color, and you know, uh-huh, you got to find the right artist at the right price to be able to do the color piece. But my gosh, Jerry, Sora Sung, she did a Power Girl where the eyes and her jawline and like the collar of the costume and the bold red of the cape filling in the negative space behind her blonde hair, I just wanted to hug this artist and have her draw for me all the time. Unbelievable.
Yeah, that piece made me feel a certain way. I don't know. It was pretty impressive.
And she was so happy to. And this was another thing where, like, I knew I wasn't that familiar with her work. Although once I saw some of her pieces, I was like, okay, I've seen that. And I saw her on the guest list and happened to, they had little images, you know, little thumbnails of the artist's work next to their name, either through the app or on the website, I forget. But I saw the bold colors. I was like, wow, maybe if she's doing color work. And she couldn't have been more friendly and more nice and more of a comic aficionado to know the characters and everything. And she hemmed and hawed over which character she wanted to do. And then she said, oh, you know what? I would do a really good chest on Power Girl. I would really like to do that. But I'm still talking about the eyes. She really did the eyes good.
Yeah.
Then, lastly, I started a Marvel Bronze Age Fatales piece. And I did it in my usual 9 grid that I do so that you get a little bit of a vertical space so you can get more than just a headshot if the artist is, you know, if you can work that out with the artist. So they end up being about 3x5 squares or so. And, you know, no difficulty picking 9 Bronze Age type Marvel characters to have done. I had done the males already in the past, so now I wanted to do one of some females. And I approached Jay Lee, and he was really interested in doing a Scarlet Witch. And his prices are pretty pricey, but he was willing to do one. And, you know, he kind of, he was a little bit sparse on it and did like a one of those headshots he does where part of the face is kind of off panel, you know. Uh-huh. And it's Jay Lee eyes, it's Jay Lee lips, but, you know, he kind of mailed it in a little bit.
Oh, I really like it, though. I see where you're coming from, but I think... I mean, I don't know what you paid for it, but I really like it.
Let's put it
this way. Don't have any regrets about this one.
Let's put it this way. I approached Billy Tucci, who I love to pal around with at the shows. He's a good guy to talk to, and his art I enjoy, even though it's more of a pinup variety. Mm-hmm. Some of his figures can be look a little stiff at times, but sometimes they're stiff in poses that you want them to stay stiff in that position for a little while. But he picked drawing the Black Cat, and he drew a 3/4 shot all the way down to the thighs, and he said, I threw in a little extra there for you to kind of make up for what Jay did, he said. Aww. And he said in this way, other artists won't be stuck thinking it's all just going to be headshots.
Sure.
Which is kind of
what did your favor.
Yeah, exactly. So that was nice of him. And boy, he was working on this Godzilla piece for someone. Not something that I would think of to commission a fellow like Tucci to draw. But yeah, my gosh, Jerry, he was drawing a Godzilla that was like, it was like a Jeff Darrow Godzilla, Jer. It was really nice. I was like, gosh, I wouldn't think of you to draw this kind of a thing, but now I am.
Yeah.
This is good. So I ended up dipping a little bit into my Baltimore budget for next month because more opportunities presented themselves than I thought. And, you know, everyone's a little bit more expensive than you hope. And maybe part of that is the Fan Expo effect. I guess I'll have to see in Baltimore what some of these same guys are charging, but... a fun show. I mean, it. If I wasn't with the family to be able to appreciate walking around the retail stuff and buying, you know, high-end foam swords and, you know, doing some of the sit in the Mos Eisley Cantina kind of a thing for a gag shot and enjoying those kind of a things. I don't know if it would be a 3-day con for me with the cost of what it costs to go and be in Boston for the weekend. Right. But having them go and having them enjoy their thing and having it be a family thing, plus being able to hit up the artists that are there, it ended up being a pretty big win for me this year.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah. And, you know, the burn thing is so funny. Like I said, it's one of those things where I don't really have sour grapes because that's what he's known for, right? It's like getting the door shut in your face by Ditko. Are you really mad at the guy for it? No, because that's him being him, right? And you had one of those interactions that are so indicative of the type of guy that he's supposed to be. At the same time, good for him that he was being so gracious and signing 10 books for people and doing all that business and put himself out there. I heard a few people asking to take pictures with him, and he said, no, that just slows things down and all that sort of stuff. But you know, if he wants to be a prima donna, I guess he's earned that right, right?
I guess I agree. So I'm torn because there's another fan expo coming in a few weeks in Toronto, the original, and he's going to be there. And I was kind of waiting to hear your story before I made a decision about what I was going to do, whether I was going to go or not.
Well,
I'm still on the fence.
You know, really look into if there are additional costs lined up for separate meet and greets with Byrne. But he put himself out there for a few different signings each of the days and just, you know, on the con floor and having, and again, signing 10 books per people. A few people were like, I didn't think he'd be around signing that many books. I didn't bring my copies of these things. I ran around to some of the vendors and bought some Byrne books to get, so I could have 10. So that aspect is pretty gracious, and not many people are idiots like me and trying to, you know, most people bring the books, right? They bring their little carts, they bring their little suitcases full of the books, and their backs are aching and everything, and I just don't do that anymore, and because of it, I got burned. But I would say do it, man. He's going to be out there signing books. Psh, why not?
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I should. I don't know. The thing that's got me really worried is I'm going to be getting the X-Men Artist Edition, right. What do they call it?
Yeah,
the
Artifact.
Artifact Edition, right.
Me too.
Very soon. It should be arriving any day now.
I know. I was hoping it was like last week.
Right. But yeah, no. Sorry. That's terrible. But so I'll have three of those to get signed. And then my two omnibus, X-Men omnibus. That's a lot of weight.
I know, right? That's why I was like, oh, this, you know, and to think of an old guy like him who's seen it all and who also probably thinks that fans value his signature so much and everything, to have a guy come up with him with the labels, I thought he, like most other artists, would say, what a great idea. But no. But no. So
I don't think he's ever heard of one of those unless he thought of it.
Yeah, right. So as long as you know that going in, you know, why not get some books signed? It's pretty cool. Pretty cool that he's making himself available.
Boy, I'd sure love a head sketch on my X-Men jam piece. You know, how do I make that happen?
That's the other thing I was going to tell you, Jerry, is he did do some sketching there.
Did he really?
I don't know how people got them set up. I know a couple of people picked up things from him there that they had arranged with him before the con. And he did it. But there were a couple of times that he was drawing, and one of the guys who was a big spender at Mark Teixeira's table on that Sunday had two pieces that Byrne did for him at the show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I wonder if he was a forum guy. Because, you know, those guys that have been on his forum for 10 years, he knows those guys pretty well.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, but the opportunities are there. He's putting himself out there, and someone asked him if he would do other cons in the future, and he said if it's a fun enough opportunity.
Sure.
So he didn't seem close to the idea.
I'm holding out hope for our local show here, Motor City Con, because he used to be a regular at the Mid-Ohio Con, which is not far from here. And a lot of the people that used to frequent that show like to hang out at the Motor City Con now. And maybe that would be enough to lure him. I don't know. It'd be great for me.
Yeah. What are your art buying habits these days? Have you been picking up any pieces? Or I know you've kind of haven't been doing the jam things anymore, right?
I've been really picky with who I've been getting pieces from on the jam pieces because I've tried to limit it to one square per artist. And, you know, I've done 25 jam pieces.
Holy
at
cow.
This point. So,
all right.
I'm kind of running out of artists.
Yeah.
The ones that are left are people like John Byrne and Paul Smith that I can't get to say yes. So I'm pretty stuck. But in terms of buying art, I've got one commission out there, and I'm starting to feel like it's possible that that's it.
Forever?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, never say never, right? But the market, I just can't. I can't. It's too much for me.
Yeah. Interesting. You know, the other part of it is, of the price thing, is this everyone having a rep now.
Yeah.
And those reps setting the prices on things and jacking up those prices. And I'm thinking if it was the fan turning around and selling the sketch that they did cheap or free that bothered the artist, then didn't they just create like a whole industry of people at that middle level? Like, isn't that exactly what these art reps are doing? Is there,
yes,
they're getting the price from the artist and then they're jacking it up even more and selling it to the fan?
Right.
Right? Yep. I mean, I'm sure David Finch's rep is saying, okay, David, what would you do a Batman headbust for? And he's like, like $200. And he's like, okay, $450.
Right.
Is what we're going to charge. So, like, he's basically done what that fan who turns around and sells it on eBay in line has done. And I guess the artist is getting more money, too. But so is that middle layer of... So is that guy, you know?
That
and who's
is a
that
great
guy?
Argument.
And why not? And why not it be the fan, then? Because then at least half of the people are actually fans and getting something that they appreciate that's actually a heartfelt thing done with good intentions. You know, it was only a few guys who were ruining it for the bunch, so to speak, right? But it's now it's like, you know. Anyway, that's how I see it.
I see it exactly the same way you do.
Yeah, I had to finally buckle down, and I bought it was at the right price. I was surprised to actually win the auction, but I bought a Paul Smith pencil sketch of Phoenix.
Ooh! Yeah. Did you post that one?
No, I didn't, because I think the group we belong to is kind of like con sketches and commissions and stuff, and I don't think buying things off eBay counts.
You don't think so?
No. I don't.
Oh.
And I think I read the, I think one time I actually did post one, and then I read the description, and I'm like, oh, this really does not count, so I removed it.
Okay.
But
well,
I'll
you
show
should send
you.
Me a picture, yeah.
It's such a light, thin pencil type of thing that I almost wonder if it's something I should get inked. I should ask you about that behind the scenes.
Yeah. Well, I guess if you got the right guy to do it.
Sure. And in today's day of being able to scan things, it's not like I can't have a nice picture of what the pencils look like forever to look at anyway. You know?
You know, another thing to consider is to scan it and print it in blue line and let an inker ink the blue line and then frame them together.
Yeah, yeah. Does that really count, though, Jerry?
That
sounds like...
I don't know. The one burn piece I have is a piece that I found on the internet and I had an inker print it and ink it. I love it.
You know,
probably doesn't count, but I love it.
Through Bob Almond, the inker from the 90s, his Inkwell Awards, he does a inking appreciation kind of society that he runs. And he does a lot of that where he'll get pencils from someone and do a bunch of blue line scans and send it out to different inkers and then auction off those different, and then you get to see the different versions that like different anchors do of it. And
oh,
it's always
I love
one of those,
looking at those.
It's one of those funny things of like, you know, like it's one of those. Do I want one of those or do I not? Or it's like over Al Rio pencils or some other guy or, you know, it's funny. I bought a Bob McLeod Western scene of a cowboy on horseback overlooking a canyon that's in all sepia tones, and it had the pencil preliminary with it, both 11 by 17s, and ooh, the pencil preliminary said to Vlad from Bob McLeod, and I'm looking around, who the heck is Vlad, you know, and I got it at a really, I mean, it was like, it was under $60, Jerry. As wow. At an eBay auction, because it's not a cape, right? It's not a superhero. And I'm trying to figure out who this Vlad guy is. I look up that there was a Golden Age artist named Vlad who did Westerns, and I'm thinking, could this have been a thing for him? Could this... And so at the con this weekend, I asked Bob McLeod about that. I'm like, Bob, I bought this piece from Bob Almond from the Inkwell Awards, and it's this beautiful piece. I love it. I got it hanging up in my living room. Who is Vlad? And he ended up saying it was a friend of his, a personal friend who loved cowboys, who he had drawn it from, and the friend passed away at a young age, and he ended up with the piece back, and then somehow eventually it ended up as a donation to the Inkwell Awards, and now it's on my wall.
Wow.
But pretty cool to have the loop closed on the Vlad mystery.
Yeah. You did it.
And to let Bob know that I'm, you know, appreciating the piece and that it's, you know, hanging somewhere in good standing.
Yeah, cool.
All right, Jerry, thank you for taking the time to join me for this quick little interlude of an episode so we could talk about the con here in between my vacations.
You poor guy.
This is the time. I love doing late summer vacations because... in some ways, the summer hasn't even started for me. But it's about to, buddy.
I can't. Yeah.
Well, enjoy the rest of the summer yourself with your family. And don't forget to start reading Tomb of Dracula as soon as the leaves start falling off the trees.
Oh, it's already feeling spooky. I had a friend post pictures of the Halloween candy display. It's coming.
I think at the CVS's, they have the Halloween candy out already.
Yeah, you got to.
All right, that's our episode this time around. I appreciate Jerry coming on with me at short notice to talk about the Boston Comic Con. Ah, Fan Expo Boston, you know how it is. And I should mention a couple of things I've been reading. Well, I've been reading nothing because I went camping and kayaking for about 4 or 5 days and then went to the Boston Comic Con, home for 5 weekdays, and then to the beach for a week where I hope to get some good reading done. I did read the Marvel 2-in-1 series, the recent one by Chip Zdarsky. We get to see what Johnny and Ben are up to, and that Johnny can't accept that Reed and Sue are gone. You see Ben trying to be the grown-up one here, pretty much, which isn't hard to do relative to Johnny, you know? Except where Doom is concerned. Ben flies off the handle repeatedly regarding Doom. But there's some Mole Man and Kirby Monsters that's kind of cool, and there's a Man-Thinker subplot that builds up, and he makes his move in issue number 9. But the book quickly becomes a cross-dimensional caper, so it's like Ben and Johnny doing the Exiles, what-if, alternative worlds thing. Yawn, you know, like there's a Reed and a Sue and a Doom, just not ours. Well, our Doom is in it too, but then that series dovetails into the first issue of the Fantastic Four, which I also, of course, had to read, being a FF file myself. And there's a 21-page lead story written by Dan Slott with art by Sarah Pacelli. It's all written by Dan Slott. There's a 9-page backup with art by Simone Bianchi, and then a 1-page, 9-panel, Scotty Young-drawn Impossible Man gag strip. The lead tale, we get to see, you know, what Johnny and Ben have been up to, that Johnny can't accept that Reed and Sue are gone. You know, does this sound familiar? But frankly, slot in just a fraction of the pages does far more characterization and accomplishes so much more to give us an update as to what's going on with these characters than Zdarsky did with his not as insightful as it could have been title there, the Marvel 2-in-1. And he slot makes it interesting, even with some interpersonal stuff that I won't spoil. There is a 5-page flashback to an old, new Fantastic Four adventure, which is cute, you know, but it's only really cute because we don't get to see the team together otherwise, which actually is the theme of the Impossible Man gag strip at the end, drawn by Scotty Young. The 9-page Simone Bianchi drawn story is a Doom tale, where basically Doom gets his mojo back, which reminded me of the old backup tale where Doom retakes Latveria from Zorba, who took the crown in Fantastic Four 200. But that's about it. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, and you can find me on the beach for the next few days. Until Reed finally clicks the ultimate nullifier for good, make mine Marvel. Later.
Any news was good news, and the